Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotional worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Healthy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Healthy Tuesday, Hank.
What's going on? Where are we off to today?
Well, the nice thing is we're in the studio today, so that's already a win.
I can see you.
Right off the top, that's a win. Today, we have a guest in the studio, which is also a win. I like to see someone in person, so I'll have some company here for the next hour. And the reason that I am excited about this guest is because I've been thinking a lot about life reviews and kind of the reflections on where we've been and where we're going. And, you know, there's a lot of research that points to the mental health benefits of doing life reviews, mostly for the elderly as kind of the capstone of their life, to look back and to be able to tell someone about their life story. And then they feel really supported by that. And in some ways, it prepares them to be able to move on to death. But it doesn't have to wait until, you know, you're in your 80s. It's actually a great thing to do in your midlife, because midlife is an interesting time. It's called middlescence because it connects interestingly to adolescence, which means little deaths. And so in adolescence, it's the little deaths of your childhood, and you kind of move from that childlike naivete into the harsh realities of what it is to be an adult. And middlescence is the death of your youth in some ways, but it's the death of those younger aspirations, like I'm going to play in Wrigley Field, or I'm going to, you know, write the great novel, or you hit middle age and you've either reached those goals or you haven't. And so middle essence is this time where you reflect and you either are pleased with your accomplishments to that point and you kind of ease into your next season of life, or you feel that you've not accomplish what you'd hoped, and you feel this kind of sense of anger or disappointment or loss. And so there's a lot of evidence of links to elder or older people having depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation because of this middle essence that we're not taught in our developmental lives by anyone, that we need to be prepared for that middle essence. Like, be prepared for that moment. We talk about going crazy, right? Midlife crises and wanting to buy a Corvette, but we don't talk about the actual developmental piece of you're going to hit this point where it is evident that you are no longer going to be moving towards those aspirations of your youth, and that you either need to be okay with that or and make a plan for what comes forward, or you're going to have to deal with the fallout. So that's been on my mind quite often, because I think in light in the context of the pandemic, a lot of people have been forced into those middle essence moments because their jobs have changed or their lives have changed drastically, and you can't just carry on the way things used to be. So there might be people having, you know, their quarter century crisis, those between 25 and 30 kind of go through a quarter century crisis. A lot of people are hitting those moments where they're needing to do some reflecting and some life review, and to look at how the events of our life, great events, tragic events, surprise events, have shaped who we are, and to be at peace with how all of the twists and turns of our life led us to where we are today. And that the hope is that we get to the no regrets. I have no regrets, even though things didn't go the way I hoped, or I wasn't expecting that turn, or I wish I could have, you know, continued this way. At the end of the day, I have no regrets, and here I am, and here's now who I will be moving forward. Because Carl Jung was the first of all the clinicians to say, you know, life actually really gets better from 56 on, because you get to let go of all of the expectations of your younger days, and who you create between 60 and your death really becomes a legacy of who you are. And so it really in many ways becomes the most productive part of our lives. And so all of the work we do building up to our 60s is what is the foundation for who we will become from 60 to our death. I find that fascinating. So that all of the things we experience from 0 to 60 are really just the training ground for the greatness we'll move into between 60 and our death. And I wish we taught young people that more, instead of throwing everything into their basket. You've got to make it all count by the time you're, you know, 40, or by the time you reach 30, or it's all for naught. If we were to tell young people from a young age, you're building the base for your greatness that comes from 60 to 80. how much differently would we live our lives? So that's kind of where my mind is rattling, and it worked out perfectly because my guest today has had many different iterations of a really interesting life that have led him to being able to reflect and review on a pretty stellar career. And so my guest is Dave Congleton. For those of you who live locally, you know him as the king of hometown radio. He has been a talk show host at KVEC Crosstown for 30 years. He just celebrated his 30th anniversary on the air, so it's very timely. It's a great time to have this conversation with Dave. But he wasn't always a beloved talk show host. He's also a screenwriter, an author. He had time as a stand-up comic. He's done some lecturing. He's done some news writing. He's had a lot of iterations of his life, and he's also had a lot of loss and sadness and tragedies that have been part of the mix and foundation of his life. And so I guess I wanted Dave to come in because he's at that point where I want to know, what is all this building for the greatness that's next? And how have your experiences in your life led you to who you are today in 30 years of kind of bringing a community like San Luis Obispo County together? So that's where we're going today. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and you'll be invited to be part of the conversation because we are here in the studio. So our number is 805-781-3875. You can also send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can find us on our Facebook page and our Instagram. Nice picture of Dave and his kitty on the pages today. You can leave us a message there. You can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org. Look under the podcast tab or the news tab, and you'll find us there in all of our shows from the last 10 years. You can podcast the show through Apple Podcast or NPR Podcast or wherever you find them. Look up A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and you'll get to listen at your convenience. So I'm excited to see where we're going to go today. We're going to take a quick break, catch our breath, and we'll be back to start our conversation. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
There'll be days like this, when there's no one complaining. There'll be days like this, when everything falls into place like the flick of a switch. Oh, my mama told me there'll be days like this.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Welcome, Dave Congleton, to my side of the studio.
Elizabeth, how very kind of you to host me, though. Listening to your that great topic, I'm not sure you picked the right guest. That's a lot of expectation on me.
That
sounds like a lot of wisdom, and every other word I heard was elder.
Yes.
Are you trying to tell me something?
Well, I was really trying to couch it down so that you wouldn't be offended. So I say elder in training is where I see you.
Now
you're
I know
elder in training.
Why you invited me. Mm-hmm. Let's get the old guy.
Elder in training. And do notice that I invited you in with your own music so you would feel welcome and at home.
Thank you. I do feel home here.
All right. So for those who may not know of Dave Congleton, I'd love you to give, because you do a great brief synopsis of how you got to be the man sitting behind the desk of hometown radio for 30 years. What was the brief trajectory of your professional life, not your personal, professional?
Well, how much time do we have?
You've got 45 seconds.
Let's bump all things considered. the short version of my professional journey is that I started out as a college professor. And I did that for about 12 years, and I hated it. I absolutely hated it. I was in a career, and I felt trapped. And so I didn't burn my bridge. I torched my bridge, and I moved to California. I came to San Luis Obispo because they had a one-year non-renewable teaching position at Cal Poly. I'd never heard of the town. I had never heard of the school, but it was a place to live in California. Why was I coming here? I was looking for some kind of creative dream that I had been having. As you pointed out, we have these dreams when we were younger. Mm-hmm. I was 34 years old and I was in Tulsa, Oklahoma. How's that working out for you, Dave? So it was now or never. So keeping it short, I dabbled in stand-up comedy for a little while. Wasn't particularly good, but I had fun. It was my transition. I talked myself into a job at the Telegram Tribune. I was there for about a year and a half, and I went down to part-time. And there was an opening at KVEC Radio. This would have been September of 1991. And my then-wife, Charlotte Alexander, was talking to the station owner, and the light went on in her head. And she said, oh, David can do this. And I was the only person they could find who was willing to work for $12,000. Betsy Nash was going to be on in the morning. Mm-hmm. I was going to be on the afternoon. I went in for my first meeting. Dave Cox, then the general manager, calls me in and says, Betsy Nash just quit. She's going to L.A. You're taking over. So the show launched in January of 1992. Why have I hung on for 30 years? I'm doing the job I was meant to do. It combined my skills in public speaking, mm-hmm. my background in teaching, mm-hmm. and my natural curiosity. Is that long enough?
No, I love that. That was okay. Perfect.
All right.
And so you've clearly succeeded in radio. But let's get back to like those early childhood dreams, because you – would you consider yourself a Jersey guy? We've had this conversation.
No, I was born in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. My father was in retail. He bounced around a lot. I grew up in suburban Chicago, so mm-hmm. I'm a son of the Midwest.
Okay. And so when you were growing up in Chicago, what did you aspire to be? If we're talking about those early adolescent childhood dreams, what did you think you would be when you grew up?
Well, it's funny because in high school, I thought I was going to be a TV writer.
Why would you think that, though?
True story. Okay. When I was in high school, I was submitting ideas to CBS, the
really?
Network. What was one? Oh, I came up with an idea about spies during the American Revolution. And it was pretty funny because I would type up like a 2-page synopsis. Another one was about the team of an American embassy somewhere in Africa. Mm-hmm. And so I type it up, 2 pages. I mail it to CBS, nobody in particular, just to the network. And in about a week, they would send me back a form because I was under 18. My dad had to sign it so that they could consider my idea. And about 2 weeks later, I'd get the form letter. Well, thank you. We've considered your idea, but we're not going to use it. But that's what I was doing.
And but what motivated that? Was it, were you a TV kid? Were you enthralled by the medium?
I watched a lot of TV.
Yeah.
I was starting in about seventh grade. I went through creative puberty. I found myself coming up with ideas, ideas for TV shows, ideas for books. Michael Penn, P-E-N-N, was the first character I created. But it all changed, and you talk about regret. Mm-hmm. When I went to college, I went to a teacher's college in Illinois, Eastern Illinois University. It was 1971. They took me, and they gave me a full scholarship to be on the speech team.
Wow.
But when you're on the speech team, you had to commit because you were traveling, you were competing, and the Hollywood stuff just went by the wayside, and I made this mistake of, I guess I'm just going to be a college professor. I'll just teach in college and coach speech. And it took me 12 years to break that cycle and get out here.
Which when you first to get a scholarship, I didn't know they gave scholarships for speech and debate team. Was it a path of least resistance, or had you given up on yourself a bit as a writer when you got into college? Where did it go?
My father, I have 2 older brothers. Bruce was the high school quarterback, star in the football team. Mm-hmm. Middle brother John was the wrestler and student government star. David had cataracts and really thick glasses, and I led a sheltered life from my parents. Or my parents created this sheltered life for me. But my dad was like, oh, what can he do? He was on the speech team, I guess, in high school. So in eighth grade, he said, I think you should enter this speech contest. It was the Optimist Oratorical Contest. And for 4 years in a row, I entered that contest. When I went to high school, I was on the speech and debate team. And that led to a scholarship to college, which led to a trip to England, which led to all sorts of things. So for those first 12 years post-college, everything was defined by my involvement in speech activities.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah. But I never planned ahead. Mm-hmm. I never, okay, this is my 10-year plan. This is my 5-year plan. I was just going with the flow. I lived in Minnesota. I lived in Indiana. I lived in Oklahoma. It was only then that I had the epiphany. This is where my life had gotten me, and that's not the life I wanted.
Were you a single man through all of this?
No, I was married 1977 and 1985. A lovely woman, but it was – she wanted to be a professor, and I thought I wanted to be a professor. So I was living in Minnesota, and she was living in Utah. I was in Indiana. She was in North Dakota, and we see each other at airports. It's like, what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
So
– So there must have been a part of you that – part of you is living out the story that your parents said this would be a good story for you. And that included getting married to someone, no matter what that looked like. And just – I mean, it sounds like you were just kind of following the path in front of you.
I got married the first time because everybody else was getting married.
Right. The path in front of you.
Yeah.
And so
– But it wasn't planned out.
Right. But I wonder how much plans – would have helped, because what if that had been your plan and you had said, I'm all in on this? You might have not felt free when you were in Oklahoma to change things up.
Well, I think that's an important point that you bring up. What happened to me in Oklahoma, I was single, no children, no commitments. I could pick up and move here. Had I had a family, and there are so many people even here that wish they were doing something else or living somewhere else, but they can't. Because they've got the house, they've got the family, they've got the obligations. When I announced at the University of Tulsa that I was leaving, at the end of the year, there were five married faculty members in my department. They all thought I was crazy. But one by one, they would come to me over the next few months and say, I wish it was me. I wish I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I made the right decision. I didn't make it in the smartest way, but it all worked out. I don't know what your takeaway of me is, but for me, despite everything that has happened, it's all worked out just fine. I've captured my dreams.
Well, I think that's the continuation of the story, because there's this Dave who has his awakening in seventh grade. I love, what did you call it? Your creative?
Creative puberty.
Yeah, creative puberty. I love that. That you start to have ideas and you have the sense of who you are, but you kind of get swallowed up into the cultural narrative, which is go to college and have a career. I mean, your father was doing his job. My job is to raise sons who can have a life. So here's a life, son. I'm pointing in that direction. But it's not that the creative Dave goes away. He just kind of lives dormantly until the opportunity arises again.
Well, I think the best example of that, Elizabeth, was Cuesta College had a writer's conference since I think it started like around 1985. I moved here in 1987.
Mm-hmm.
I never, ever went to the writer's conference until I became the director in 1994. And this is the true story. I did not go because I was petrified that somebody would come up to me and say, what are you doing here?
You're not a writer.
Yeah. Mm. Why are you here? And so, yeah, I was doing that thing in high school, but I kept that to myself, and I never shared. If you're going to call on the show, call the phone and not my cell phone. Getting cell phone calls here. I had to come out creatively and convince myself that I was a writer and that I could do this.
If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Dave Congleton, a local talk show host, hometown radio at KVEC, 30-year career celebrating, but also a man of many different lives. And I wanted to invite Dave in, one, because I love the stories of ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And I think he would be an inspiration to those who have dreams that they put aside that might be emerging again, and that there's so much to life from 60 and beyond. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and our phone lines are open at 805-781-3875 if you have a question or comment for Dave or myself. All right, so there's two things that seem to be happening in our lives. One is when we're single and we have no obligations, it opens up the doors for, I think I'm going to go to California. That sounds like a great idea. And so you get here, you're kind of free. But what is it that focuses your life? Because your next wife, Charlotte Alexander, who you mentioned earlier, found the job or, you know, encouraged you to take the job at KVC. How else did that relationship shape your life moving forward? Because I would imagine the single Dave making choices and the married or relational Dave making choices are in somewhat different Daves.
All right. Let's go there.
Okay.
there are two women that are critical to my life. The first is Charlotte Alexander. We were married from 1988 to about 2015. I owe everything to Charlotte in terms of my professional accomplishment. She married this guy and is like, okay, what am I going to do with this guy? And so the radio show, going into newspaper work, the writer's conference, encouraging me to pick up screenwriting again in 2005, all of these seeds were planted by Charlotte. Now, having said that, given the opportunity, I proved myself, right?
Yes.
But she gave me that opportunity. And well, on the day of the 30th anniversary, I reached out to her, and we still get along, and I thanked her. I thanked her for giving me the radio career. She saw in me something that I hadn't seen in myself. But the other person that deserves credit is Kathy Mink, a woman I have been seeing now for almost 5 years. Kathy is a retired elementary school teacher in South County, a rock star down there. Anywhere we go, people flock to her. And not to speak for Kathy, but I was already established professionally, but I was still doing the work personally. I mean, I've been divorced twice. Hello. Mm-hmm. And so Kathy, I think, gets credit for shaping me in the man I have become. And I think that if you knew me 30 years ago versus the man today, you will see a difference. And I would – so Charlotte shaped me professionally, but Kathy has made me a better person and a more reflective person.
So hence we get to have this conversation, which I've asked you to have for many years.
Yes, for
so
many years.
Thanks, Kathy, for that. But so without either of these women in your life, who is Dave landing in California in 1987 to today? Without meeting those women, where would you have gone?
Well, that's an interesting question. And even before meeting Charlotte, the potential was there. I entered the Bob Zaney Comedy Contest on a lark. That was March of 1988, and I beat out 15 other people with a Rick Martel joke. That, it was great. It was wonderful. And then also I moved down to Venice, and I had to make that decision in January 1989. Did I want to stay with Charlotte, who was living in Indiana at the time because she was under contract? I would have to go out and keep her company in Indiana for a couple months, or did I want to stay in LA? And I was just at the point where I was making legitimate professional connections. So had Charlotte not come along, had Kathy not come along, had I stayed in LA, I think I would have done okay. I probably would have been living in the Valley and working somehow in the industry. But I think my life is better off up here. I think I made the right decision.
In retrospect. Getting to the no regrets part.
I know multiple Hollywood writers now, and none of them are happy.
Well, and of course, that's a whole other level of the conversation is, you know, no matter what path we take, how we define our lives as happy or you know, satisfying or unsatisfying really is our own choice. So we determine that because there's so many directions we go that all have some good things and some bad things in them. And we determine whether they are good or bad. You know, if I'm in Oklahoma teaching, I get to decide if it's good or bad for me. Or if I get to California, I go to Venice. I mean, it's your attitude about them. And one of the things we didn't talk about is that along with you know the radio hosting and the writing, the comic, that you have been successful as a screenwriter, that young man who was sending out ideas. I mean, you've had ideas and you wrote, you know, I don't know how many screenplays you've written before.
I've probably written about 15 altogether. Okay. And since Authors Anonymous, I finished four. In fact, I just finished one yesterday. And the rejection is just so overwhelming. And it's very kind of you to think that of me. But I sold a screenplay to Hollywood and it got produced with mixed results. But I got it produced. I had that experience. And I'm trying to do it again. But.
Well, something that you brought up earlier that I keep going back to is who decides who we are? You know, part of you said, I'm not a writer. I'm like, why would I go to the writer's conference? I'm not a writer. And I've always been so impressed with people who say, I am an artist or I am a writer. And they give themselves that moniker and then they pursue that. And I'm a little bit more like you, where I've waited a lot of my life for someone to tell me that this is who I am. And then to move forward, I need permission to say, oh, I actually do this. Like even doing this work with radio, because I don't do it 5 days a week like you do, I always just see it as a little hobby thing I do.
Yeah.
So when did that shift? What was it that made you comfortable saying, I am a writer?
When I started newspaper work in 1989 and I started being paid for it, I have been a paid professional writer since 1989. And I don't know if that's the best criteria, but that works for me. I write something, I get paid for it.
So is that always the definition of it then?
Well, side story. My brothers were both very skeptical of me. They didn't understand why I wanted to give up the sure thing of being a college professor. And both of them have told me within the last year that they're very proud of me, of everything that I have done since leaving teaching, and that I made the right decision. And that has certainly validated me.
Were you close to your brothers growing up?
Not particularly, because Bruce is 7 years older and John is 5 years older. So they were off to college, and then Bruce got married and John went to law school. And so we weren't particularly close, and then we really weren't very close. And now we're very close since the death of my parents. Bruce is a regular on my show. He's an arch conservative, extremely religious. Mm-hmm. But I love him and he loves me, and we have a grand old time. And we're all vacationing together this July up in the San Juan Islands. So,
your parents would be happy about that, huh?
They would be very happy about that.
Because how is the family dynamic as a whole when you were growing up?
Well, yeah, we can go there. I grew up in a lower middle class family. I have no secrets. I've written about this. I grew up in a lower middle class family. My mother, by and large, was a homemaker. She worked for a few years as a cashier in a grocery store. My father was an alcoholic, and he had a severe drinking problem. So my childhood was kind of like the Twilight Zone. But this amazing thing happened in 1985. He had what I had. He had a heart attack, and he had a quintuple bypass. And the doctor apparently said to him, if you drink again, you will die. And that put the fear of whatever
all
in him. He quit, and he lived for almost another 25 years. And I had two dads, because I had the dark side, and then I had this sweet, gentle man. It was phenomenal.
And I wonder –
the three of us, the sons, we all carry the baggage of that, mm-hmm. right?
Well, and that's what I was going to say. The timing's interesting. Your dad has his heart issue at 1985. In 1987, your world really opens up in many ways, and I don't know if it's consciously or unconsciously that you make the shift in your life in 1987 that opens doors, and maybe it's because you feel freed of any pressure of trying to please your dad, or you feel freed because you think that could be my future. I need to act on it. Were you conscious of that?
Actually, it was a lot simpler than that.
Okay.
In November of 87, the years fade by. It may have been November of 86, pardon me. I went to my last professional convention in Chicago. I was there for 4 days. I went to one panel. That was the panel that I was presenting. I was in the bar. I was shopping. I went to all the parties. And I came back to Tulsa. And I'm not making this up. The next morning, I looked in the mirror and I said, you're 34 years old. You're divorced. You're not meant to be a professor. Stop this. I went into therapy. Found a therapist, a guy named Terry Nissen. In Tulsa, Oklahoma, he was an LDS bishop. He changed my life. He sat me down. He said, Dave, what do you want to do? I said, I want to live in California, and I want to do something creative. I think I'm meant to do that. He said, okay. we're going to work on this. You're going to spend the rest of your contract, fulfill the contract, and then you're going to move to California and you're going to be creative. That man changed my life because he gave me permission.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I appreciate your analysis there, but it had nothing to do with my dad, you know?
Yeah.
We never had that conversation. So, Dave, what do you want to do? Dad and I never had that conversation.
Which, no, I understand that, but I think there's that unconscious freeing of when your dad changed into this more softer, more open, available human being, whether overtly or covertly, in some way it frees you to do your thing because your dad's also free. You can feel how you want. That's fine. I'm just listening.
Well, the other thing I have to remember is that I was on a tenure track position.
Yeah.
And I knew I was not going to get tenure at the University of Tulsa. So what was my life going to be? Minot State College, going back to Eastern Illinois University. If I had done that, I'd be dead by now.
Mm.
Right? I would have picked up after my dad. I would have started drinking heavily. I would never have made it to 68.
I also love that you have these guides or mentors or beacons that have been touchstones in your life, the therapist and, you know, Kathy and Charlotte, that to be able to identify them, to have those people, to be awakened enough to say, I will go towards the light, right? This person who might have some guidance is huge. If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. My guest today is Dave Congleton, radio host, screenwriter, author, part-time comic, man about town.
No,
I know,
no
I'm
comic.
Just digesting. There's no comic. He's not funny at all.
Yeah.
No. But he is my guest today, and we're kind of exploring the seasons of his life and the choices that we make and how at a certain point in our life before we move into our elder years that we get to reflect on all of the twists and turns that have been the foundation for who we will be when we move into our greatness. That's Carl Jung's statement, not mine. Who will we be when we move into our greatness from 60 and beyond? All of the things that we've done open the doors for what is next. And you are welcome to be part of the conversation, 805-781-3875. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back to continue our conversation. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
I must be looking for something, sacred I lost. But the river is wide, and it's too hard to cross. Even though I know the river is wide, I walk down every evening and stand on the shore. I try to cross to the opposite side so I can finally find what I've been looking for. In the middle of the night, I go walking in my sleep. Something taken out of my soul, something I'd never lose, something somebody stole.
Somebody stole.
I don't know why I've been walking at night, but now I'm tired and I don't want to walk anymore. Oh, it must take the rest of my life until I find what it is I've been looking for.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. My guest is Dave Congleton. And Dave, I chose Billy Joel to be our song today because I know that Billy Joel is your favorite artist, if not one of your favorite artists, and you got to meet him, right?
Well, it was a phone interview.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting. This sort of ties into the topic, is that one of the things as you age, I submit, Elizabeth, is that you look at like your heroes differently. Long admired, right, Billy Joel. But then I met Rick Linden, who lives here locally. And he had a rather unpleasant experience with Billy Joel that might be the basis of a great interview down the road.
Mm-hmm.
And the point being is that you come to appreciate that these folks, they're very talented, and you admire their music, but you don't necessarily admire the person anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, yes, love the Billy Joel music. I use it on my show a lot. I've been to, I don't know, about 15 concerts. But I've come to appreciate that he's just a guy. He's just a guy with the same kind of problems that we have. And sometimes, well, I always say I don't ever want to meet the people I admire mm-hmm. because they always they typically disappoint.
You know, and I found that too because I've been able to interview a lot of authors that really influenced me. And I've been very careful because there's a couple that I absolutely will not even attempt to try to meet for fear that it would kind of take the luster off of my fantasy of who they are. So Dave Conelton is my guest. Our number is 805-781-3875. And it looks like Craig wants to speak with us. Hey, Craig, what's on your mind today?
Good afternoon, Elizabeth. Good afternoon, David. I haven't talked to you for a long time.
It's my neighbor, Craig Nettycombe.
David, I just wanted to, you know, I'm on my way back. Just happened to tune in. I'm on my way back from the beach with my dog, Jarvis. And I was listening to this interesting interview and thinking how you have been so good to me over the years, supporting me in print and on your radio show. So I just wanted to say happy anniversary and say thank you.
That's very kind of you, Craig, one of the most talented musicians I've ever had the pleasure to know and interview.
He is. Oh, shucks.
Craig was one of the first people to reach out to me as well and brought a CD very early on. And so, Craig, thank you for tuning in and calling in today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you both for being there.
Thank you, Craig. Thank you for being there.
So I want to dive into the little mental health pieces.
I got the $25 pledge drive from him.
You did?
That's why people aren't calling in, because they call in here. They have to pledge, right?
Yes, they do, in order to get on the air. No, that is not true. Anyone can call.
There's that humor.
All right, so don't take me off track, because there's a couple big parts of this. That yes, those are professional steps, and yes, there are the loves of your life, but there have also been some major tragedies just in the years that I've known you that have also, I'm sure, shaped you in ways that have opened you up to your wise elder years you're moving into. And the first one that I can recall is that you had a house fire and lost the dogs.
And cats. Three cats, two dogs. Yeah. December 14th, 1997, 280 Pablo Street. No, Pacific Street, sorry.
Yeah, and how did that shape you?
Wow. Well, it's interesting. One way that it shaped me is that I came to California because I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be an author. So be careful what you wish for. Because, yeah, I became an author. I had a book published that sold quite well. And all I had to do was give up almost everything that I loved. Because the book, Three Cats, Two Dogs, One Journey Through Multiple Pet Loss, came as a result of that fire. Mm-hmm. Right? So how else did it change me? Well, for about 20 years, because Charlotte and I lost five animals, we decided we'd go out and save all the other animals that we couldn't save that night. So at the height of our insanity, we were living in a Tascadero in a tract home with five dogs and 12 cats. And from time to time, there was a guest dog in the garage. And they were indoor cats, by the way. And for the next, 6-7 years, I was what they called in the business a pet writer. I wrote books and magazine articles about pets. And that was fine, and I was glad to do it. I was motivated to do it. But along about 2005, looking in the mirror again, so is this it? You're going to be the pet writer for the rest of your life? You came here to sell a screenplay, mm-hmm. right? You've said everything you have to say about pets. You've written the books. You've done the articles. You've done the presentations. Now let's get back to the mission. Let's complete the mission. So,
and so part of the healing of the grief was kind of open the door to writing and doing this work. And when you felt you had kind of done your grief piece, it opens up a door again to now the screenwriting path begins. And at what point, because now my timelines might be weird, but you had, as you mentioned, your heart attack. You didn't have a heart attack, though.
No,
you had.
No, that was 2019.
Right.
Short version on that. Mm-hmm. You open that door.
I'm going to.
So in May of 2018, a group of us fly to Iceland.
That's right.
It's my 65th birthday. So beautiful country. If you got you get a chance, go. There's a waterfall along the southern shore, and you walk up these steps. I got about halfway up, and I'm. I thought, oh geez, you're just out of shape. You can't breathe. Whatever, and. About 2 days later, I'm going up the side of a volcano, same thing again. So I get back, I go to see Dr. Goodman, and he's, oh, you really ought to go have your heart checked. And he made me an appointment. That was June. 3 days later, I get hit by a car.
That's right.
Right? So, and I'm in rehab, and I'm laid up, and all of a sudden, the issue in my chest, I just forget about. Fast forward to February 1st. 2019, Kathy and I are with John Lindsay and his wife down in L.A. at the Forum, Elton John concert. Come out of the tunnel. We're in the cheap seats, of course, like 35 steps. So this time I go see Dr. Goodman. He sets me up with Dr. Robert Doria, and heart specialist. Doria brings me in. They put me on the treadmill. I can't do the treadmill. He's got to help me back to the chair. And he's like, okay, you need to come in, and we're going to do an angiogram, angioplasty, Angie Dickinson. I don't know.
The whole thing.
You're going to do that, and maybe we can just put in a couple stents. So on February 13th, Kathy and I go into French Hospital. They do the tests, and I'm lying in the bed, and Dr. Doria comes in with a diagram of the heart and the main artery. It's totally black. He says, your main artery is 99% blocked. I don't know why you're still alive. But we have Dr. David Canvasser available tomorrow, Valentine's Day, and he will do open heart surgery on you. Quintuple, just like my dad. Kathy's crying. I'm crying. But what are you going to do, right? By the way, Dr. Canvasser, who's going to be on my show in February, he was a veterinarian, and he went back to med school to become a heart surgeon.
There you go. There you go.
This guy saved my life.
And there is no irony in the fact that you are a man who saved many animals' lives, and a reformed veterinarian did your heart surgery. I just like to make those connections.
Yeah.
Okay, so how did this change you? How did that change you?
Well, you can't separate the two. One is being hit by a car, which mm-hmm. I have no memory of. And I'm grateful for that. And then the heart incident, that's like, what, 6-7 months of each other?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody is sending me a message, right? And the message is, what are you doing, Dave? Are there changes you need to make? All right, do you need to be more careful crossing the street? Do you need to be more careful about your body and take care of yourself? Do you need to kind of mellow out a little bit? Listen to Kathy a little bit more, right? Yeah. So I come out of those back-to-back experiences every day as a gift, right? You appreciate people more. You appreciate life more. You're not as quick to pick a fight.
Are you a kinder, gentler man?
Well, let's not push it. I'm trying to be. I am trying to be. But I'm 68 years old, and I'm still a work in progress. Some days I'm that guy, and other days the old Dave rears his ugly head. I've learned largely through Kathy's help to build a stronger filter. I have attention deficit disorder. Others seem to think I'm somewhere on the spectrum, whatever. And I'm always quick to criticize. I'm quick to respond. I'm quick with a joke, even when it's not appropriate. And so I've learned, and I really am getting better at this, to think before I speak. And that has been a blessing to me.
My guest is Dave Congleton, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. And Dave, the other kind of life-altering thing I want to talk about is your eyes. Because all the years I've known you, and you started off talking about your childhood with cataracts, your journey with your eyes has been, seems like, nonstop. How has that impacted who you are and how you see yourself, not to make a pun?
Well, it's the defining characteristic of me. I was born with cataracts. My mother was pregnant with me in 1953, and she developed chickenpox. She had already had it once. She didn't think she could get it a second time, but you could. I was diagnosed at the age of 4, and I had 4 surgeries, 2 in each eye, and they removed the lens in each eye because in 1957, 58, that's all they could do. Had this happened a year earlier, I would have been blind. There would have been nothing they could have done. And so I wore those thick Coke bottle glasses. Mm-hmm. So not a lot of bullying, but people making fun of me. And I wasn't physically strong. I developed a wit because people didn't mess with me because I was quick on my feet with a comment. That's my theory. And that clearly defined my self-image for years. And then I got contact lenses. And then in 94, Dr. Michael Lindberg gave me a lens in each eye. And for 20 years, I had perfect 20/20 vision. It was incredible. And my mom always felt guilty about what happened. Mm-hmm. And she lived long enough for me to have the surgery. And oh, God. I remember Dr. Lindberg came on the show and she called in from Seattle. And we're just all crying. Everybody's crying. Yeah. Time for a break?
No. You can catch your breath if you want because we do have a couple calls. Mm-hmm. But I, before we jump in, I just want to say
take a call.
I will. But it's don't get away from, you can't get away from this. That I just am so fascinated that, you know, how each of the things, something like your eyes and a lifetime of struggle with them, it gave you sight into different ways of interacting with the world. Like you might not have been a speech guy. You might not have learned to be so clever and quick if you hadn't had to avoid bullying. I think all this is so important in everyone's life review is that even in the darkest of tragedies or most, you know, difficult of times, we do come out of it with a different way of being and interacting with the world. And you're such a great example of that.
You're very kind.
All right. Inanna, I don't know if I'm...
Hi, how's it going?
Good. Thank you for calling in. What's on your mind today?
Oh, you're welcome. I was so excited to turn on the radio and hear David. David, so it's great to hear you talk more rather than asking all the great questions that you usually do.
I agree.
And I'm always impressed by your combination of intellect and heart. And it's just such a great idea. I'm in the middle of my work day, and I'm just really glad I tuned in. And I wanted to ask kind of right on the back of what Elizabeth just said, I'm really fascinated by how we have this cultural story that you know you should have your dreams and have them clearly lined up and then go pursue them and then go get them, right? And that's viewed as like a positive life path and everybody kind of cheers you on. But when you end up in a situation for whatever reasons that is really negative and you know it, and then we sort of culturally consider that more as failure when you get into like real life review with people, I think it's the times where we're uncomfortable and where we really know that we're not doing the right thing that leads to that right turn or that left turn or, you know, then leads us to that next journey. And it certainly sounds like you've had a lot of those in your story. And I feel like a lot of people do, and I wish we could change the cultural narrative around that a little bit. But I just wanted to, if you wanted to speak on that a little bit more.
Another one of my favorite musicians. Absolutely love you, Nani. You have a lot of musicians listening to your show.
Well, how could that be on a music station?
I don't know. We're all at Dave.
What do you think?
Well, thank you for asking, Dave. I love that you brought this up because I think having too clear of a path in some ways prevents people from ever questioning or exploring the things they might have really enjoyed, and that there's almost a beauty in kind of falling into something and having the freedom to say, oh, no, that wasn't it for me. I'm going someplace else. And also, even though Dave didn't agree with me, I think if our parents get out of the way and their expectations can get out of the way, it opens us up and frees us to being able to pursue things that really interest us.
And I would, if I may, I would just tag on and to address Yanana directly, is the idea that for me, I don't beat up on myself anymore for those 12 years as a teacher. I don't say, oh, geez, why didn't you go out to L.A. right away? Why didn't you come to California right away? The main thing is I eventually came. I got here. And I have a lot of positive memories for those 12 years.
That's perfect. Mm-hmm. Yanana, thank you so much for calling. Call in more often. Like having you on the air.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Thanks for that.
You're so nice to your callers. I just hang them up. Get out of here.
Kathy is our next caller. You're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Hi, this is Kathy Upright. Dave, I just happened to pick up the show as I was in my car running errands. And I wanted to ask you, I've always wondered how you found the time to write the screenplay that you ended up writing.
Great question, because he has so much else going on. How'd you do that?
Oh, geez. Well, it's funny. How much time do we have? Well, this is an important story. I'll make it short. I tried to write screenplays from 1987 to about 1993, and I just quit. I was terrible. I was focusing on the big concept idea and getting nowhere. Fast forward to my dear friend, Catherine Ryan Hyde. In 2000, she had the most incredible year ever. She wrote Pay It Forward. She was on the top of the New York Times bestselling list. She got a New York agent. She had a 4-book deal. She gets it made into a movie with Kevin Spacey after he got the Oscar. Then the Clinton White House calls. They want her to fly and come out to the White House for a private screening with Barbara Streisand. And I'm like, my God, how much success can one writer have? So we go to the premiere of Pay It Forward. It's in Atascadero. I'm sitting right behind Catherine, and I've told her this story, and she's getting all this attention. And we're driving home afterwards, and I said to Charlotte, you know, I'm jealous. I'm jealous of Catherine. And Charlotte, without missing a beat, said, Catherine does the work. You don't do the work. And she's right. I was just dreaming about being a writer. So 4 years later, when I decided to give screenplays another try, I had been the director of the Cuesta College Writers Conference. I knew all these writers. The point being, the first draft came out in 3 weeks because for the first time ever, I wrote what I knew and boom. Now, it took 7 years, but you write what you know. Again, am I answering your question, Kathy?
Yeah, thank you. And yeah. So are you like one of these people that would get up at 4 a.m. and work for 3 hours before you went to your real job?
Just on the script I just finished, I was driving my Kathy crazy over the weekend because I was staying up to midnight. I have to change this word. I've got to go change this scene. I called it doing surgery. And she was looking at me like, are you okay? Yeah, I'm creating. When you're motivated, you find the time.
I agree. And it's interesting that sometimes the more busy you are, the more you get done. And when we have endless amounts of time, we tend to waste a lot of it.
Yeah.
Kathy, thank you for calling in.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
Have a great day. And one more call today. We're going to squeeze in Greer. Thanks for calling in.
Hey.
Greer.
I know. You've never called my show before. You're too busy on Dave's every week.
Greer, what's the pet? What's the pet this week? You got a dog for adoption?
What's the pet? Who knows? I never know until the time I go in, and then I look at the inventory. But, Dave, I wanted to say that, look, you've had many events change your life, obviously. But you've also changed the lives of so many animals with your show, and you know, I mean, the appreciation that I feel for that is immense, just immense. And I know I speak for not only the dogs and the cats and so on, but I'm sure many people out there, you know, you've affected their life by, you know, helping them understand, you know, what is available at that county shelter.
Thank you, Greer. I appreciate that.
That's very kind of you, Greer. It's been a great partnership.
Oh, and it brings me to my last question because our hour went by so quickly. What do you want to be known for? Moving into your time to be great, 60 to death.
An elder statesman.
That's right. What do you want to be known for, Dave?
I want to be known as the guy who followed his dream and devoted his life to catching that dream. and it was worth it. And along the way, it sounds like I have impacted some people and some animals' lives, and that's been very grateful. It's been very gratifying.
Are there any more screenplays inside of you?
I told you, I just wrote one.
Done, so what's next?
I just finished one. I don't know. I'm gonna come to KCBX. I'm gonna do the reluctant professor.
There we go. I appreciate you.
I'm in a good spot.
You are in a good spot.
I'm in a good spot. I'm happy, healthy. I have a woman who loves me. A third of the people in this town love me. A third hate me, and a third don't know who I am, and that's just fine.
And so it's been a good ride in this life review.
Yes.
And do you feel that you're moving into a new space? I mean, it sounds like you've lined up a lot of things that are leading to...
I'm going to stay on the radio as long as I can. I'm going to keep writing as long as I can. I don't want to retire. I'm going to travel some more. I don't know.
It's a good life.
I still am not looking ahead. Oh, 5 years from now, I want to be doing this. I'm not that guy.
Well, and it seems like it's worked out for you well to just be present in what you're doing.
I'm here.
And to go through the doors that open for you.
I'm on the reluctant therapist.
I'm so glad you were. David Congleton, thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me.
If you would like to listen to other shows, check us out at kcbx.org. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Instagram. Podcast our show. Tell your friends about us. And thank you, as always, for tuning in every Tuesday at 2. We'll be back next Tuesday. Thank you for listening and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
In every heart there is a room, a sanctuary safe and strong, to heal the wounds from lovers past. Until a new one comes along, I spoke to you in cautious tones. You answered me with no pretense, and still I feel I said too much. My silence is my self-defense. Every time I've held a rose, it seems I only felt the thorns. And so it goes, and so it goes, and so will you soon, I suppose. But if my silence be my worst mistake, so I will share.